dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to our second spring show here in 2014 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Jeremy Ward. And, you know, Jeremy, I know last week you ended the show, and you were hoping some people would talk to us a little bit about their superstition in sports. Very superstitious. As you can see, Bruce is bringing his A game right from the start this week.
That's right. Yeah,
Jerry, you were talking, you know, just from a lot of different age groups and a lot of different people, you know, the superstitions that go into sports. And I was thinking about this just the other day, even when I was driving into work, and you pull into almost an empty parking lot, and I'll still park in the same spot, and you'll see a lot of different people do the same thing. Or, you know, you go to church and you'll see people sit the exact same spot week by week. And it's just, we're creatures of habit. And this does kind of go over into sports a little bit. We did have some feedback. I know I had some old teammates that would always make you sit places on the bus. Had some emails this week where some people saying wearing certain items, that teams off to a 500 start, one player says, "I just realized that I was wearing the long sleeves underneath we won and the short sleeves underneath we lost. And with the weather getting hot, I'm not sure what I'm going to do now." People entering the box the same way as a baseball, softball hitter. Just some interesting feedback there. Jeremy, what's some of your take over this particular topic? I know you had heard from some people, and you had started this up last week. Just some of your thoughts on it.
Well, it actually all started with that song. My youngest daughter had found an old pregame CD we played before baseball games, and this song was on it, and she just couldn't understand what that had to do with baseball. So it led to about an hour-long conversation about superstitions and things that you just didn't do. And you know, your brother Matt and my brother actually are notorious for calling me or texting me you know, in the seventh grade thing, someone's throwing a no-hitter and that. so you know, Matt, it's like in code now, he'll be like, "Are you watching the game?" He doesn't mention the event.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because we were playing at a baseball game, just an awesome SVC game this past week, Paint Valley Huntington, and Anthony McFadden was really dealing, a sophomore pitcher from Paint Valley, and he actually had a no-hitter broken up into the ninth inning of a scoreless game, and we had a young kid keeping the book, and he was smart enough to know that, "Your coach, I know I'm not supposed to talk about this, but I don't think Huntington has a hit yet." This was like in the sixth or seventh inning. So it's so funny you say that, but it is neat that, you know, kids grow up. Do you think that's more true in the baseball, softball setting than in the other sports?
I really do. I think it is. And, you know, I learned, you know, some of it from older players, some of it from just, you know, watching, listening to games. I shouldn't say watching. I think I learned most of that from listening to major league games on the radio, and just, you know, as the commentators talk about the habits of the players, or, you know, just kind of the sideline conversations that they have about, you know, talking to players before the game, this and that, you know, pre-game meals. I always remember them talking about weight bogs, eating chicken, and fried chicken. You know, you don't think about that being that big of a deal, except for 162 days out of 180. I would say that's kind of a big deal. But little things like, you know, never putting your bats away until the game's over. And you know, certain situations where you just don't, you don't bother a player, you don't talk to a player, or certain things you just don't ask during a game, things like that. And, you know, part of it, I think, is I would consider it etiquette, and others would consider it superstition or just obscure thinking, I suppose. So I just get a kind of get a kick out of that. And I was talking to a guy today, actually, that I played against in college, and our daughters play softball together now a little bit. And we had a pretty good conversation, and it always comes back to pitchers, you know. And it seems like the relief pitchers or the left-handed pitchers, as I always pick on my left-handed daughter, about having these odd little things about, you know, wearing a shirt or wearing a cutoff shirt under a shirt or just goofy little things that they have to do. I had a guy that played with me that used to bury a small stuffed animal in the mound before he pitched. You know, just odd little things like that. But yeah, you look back at it and you make it laugh, and it just makes you think of those commercials.
Here's another one I see having a routine, not just at the free throw line as a shooter, but maybe something they do coming up to the line. You know, you do see that at all levels where, you know, they right. might touch something on their arm or do something. So yeah, they're all over sports. I've enjoyed some of the feedback we have received this week, and fans, you can continue to send that to the inbox at admin1@svcsportzone.com. Let us even know on Facebook or Twitter. We're SVC Sports Zone on there as well. Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, we have a great show ahead this week. We will talk about some fish getting too big for the pond and how some people feel some fish are too small. If you have any connection to the SVC, it will be impossible to not have an opinion on our next segment when we talk about it in about 27 seconds. Well, Jeremy, I tell you what, the word expansion has been something that's been thrown around the SVC for probably 5, 6, 7 years now, and maybe even before then, and I just didn't hear about it because I wasn't involved in the website yet or not, but probably over the last 3 or 4 months, the talks have come on maybe somewhat seriously, probably more than I can ever remember, and I'll tell you, the whole rumor mill, you know, you get so many different schools out there, and it's hard to know which ones are for real and which ones are not, and I'm sure we'll know more about it here in the weeks to come. But it just got me thinking about the schools again and the different perspectives, because I think the hardest thing is change. When and that's in any aspect of life. You know, you have your old versus the new. And really the reality of the SVC is the SVC is not the same as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I guess the perfect example for me, I'll just share a personal note, and I really want to get your feedback, would be, you know, the school I graduated from in Uniota. Obviously, Uniota has become a really, really big school in terms of enrollment. And people will come to me. In fact, Jeremy, you even said this in a phone conversation that generated a pretty interesting discussion here earlier in the week, because you're one of about 4 or 5 people probably in the last 2 years or so that have made a similar comment where they'll say, Shane, you can give such an interesting perspective because you've got the Uniota perspective and then you teach and coach at such a small school like Paint Valley. And, you know, when I think about it, I don't know that I agree with that at all. It's probably impossible for me to agree with that because it would be unfair for me to say that I know today's Uniota. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're always going to have a special place for the school you went to and for the sports programs you played in, the coaches you played for and the teammates you played with. I don't mean it like that. What I mean is just the culture of Uniota. When I went to school, I go all the way back to my, you know, grade school days. You know, there were 4 sixth grades. You know, now, Jeremy, what would there's probably what, 7, 8, 9 of them? I don't know, in terms of just number of classes in the sixth grade level.
Right, you're looking at 7 or 8, basically, in most grade levels.
Yeah, I mean that's just a, you know, a number sense to go off there. Boys and girls played soccer together. Where now, you know, there's some years where they not only play it separately you know, within boys and within girls, they do it at a very high level, a state ranked level. Cross country teams were begging people to run to earn a point or two in the all sports banner. I can remember that vividly in high school, where now Uniota sets the standard in cross country, and you know they're not begging anyone to just try to steal a point or two in the all sports banner. It's basically been theirs since 2000 on. I can remember the days of two days of cuts just to have a JV baseball team down, where now you look around the entire league, that's, and the numbers being so different. So I guess those are just some of my thoughts, Jeremy. You have such an interesting perspective because you come from Vinton County, which by SVC standards would be considered a fairly big school. Jackson, you've had some experience there. That would be, obviously a big school. And now Uniota as well. Do you see Uniota, the Zane Trace, the Westfall, do you see that size school as being more of that Jackson or a Vinton County or an Athens type of level of enrollment? Or is this something that's just maybe a bunch about nothing in terms of the SVC?
Well, it's unique, and those are conversations that I've had many times with people, and people ask you, well, what's different or what's better about this place or that, and I try to think about how comparable in size really the three are. Now, when you go from Jackson to Uniota, I think Jackson's a considerably bigger than Uniota, but. Sure. Step for step, I guess, from comparing one to the other, Jackson was a little bit bigger, and then Uniota a little bit smaller than Vinton County in terms, but when you're talking about playing in Division II and playing in the Division II tournaments, and I think everybody's probably tired of hearing me talk about that from one season to the next, but it's just a different mindset when you have a school that's that big. It's run differently. There's a little less sense of community in terms of one sport to the next, because they're, just take the fall, for example, when there are that many sports going on, you don't even necessarily have, the parents off of the, volleyball team, they may not necessarily know the kids and the parents on some of the soccer teams, across country teams.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So it's harder to follow when you think about how much is offered in a particular season. It's not the same as basically if you play a sport in this season, it's football. And if you play a sport in the winter, it's basketball. So anytime you have more options, you certainly, number one, have to have the people to fill them. And when you're a Division II size school, you should be able to, and you should offer more sports. But it plays a completely different role, I think, from a community standpoint, from a support standpoint. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes that's bad. I think there's nothing better than when you have the entire soccer team come to a volleyball game, or when you have all your other sports teams kind of collectively follow the other. I think so within the school, it's a different animal as well, whereas sometimes in the small schools, pretty much all your eggs are in one basket, and you can benefit from that, as everybody kind of rallies around the same cause, especially if you're successful. But it puts a lot of pressure on the same kids over and over and over again. And I just think from an administrative standpoint, from a community support standpoint, and then from an athletic standpoint, there's just a huge difference between, a Division IV community school and a Division II school.
Well, I don't think there's any question. I'll tell you what we'll do here, Jeremy. Let's go a little big school, small school, just to try to give some perspective out there to the fans as we talk a little bit about opinions in terms of the expansion that's possibly going to be a reality here somewhere in the future. Let's start at the junior high level. In my notes here, I'm looking at, the small gates versus some big gates, dwindling rosters. Difficult to get kids out and make it an experience. I know when I was the junior high AD a while back, the league has just taken on some different scheduling ideas. A lot of people have been around the SVC for a while now can remember the days that, say, in basketball, you would only have the league schedule of the other schools one time. Now, there are some schools you still played twice just because the ADs got together and said, hey, it makes sense for, say, Uniota and Zane Trace to play twice, but there would only be one designated league game for say, the eighth grade. Then they went to the home away series now, where the way that people know it now. And, you know, over the last 10 years or so, I've heard some mixed reactions. I know a lot of times with the smaller schools, they don't like the idea of being forced into those 14 games. They would like to get some different types of games in terms of level of the competition. Then I know some of the big schools have not liked, you know, some of the gates and some teams not having full rosters and things like that. What's been your experience, Jeremy, as a junior high AD at the junior high level in terms of sports that some of the enrollment discrepancies have brought on?
Well, I do think that, you know, one of the unique factors of the SVC that makes it special at the lower levels, at the junior high levels, is that normally that the travel and the gates for junior high are really strong. And, you know, occasionally you get some weaker gates when you have mismatches, or as we found, if a team may only has a seventh grade or an eighth grade team and doesn't have both, whether it's, you know, normally that it's more common in basketball for that to happen. But I know it's been a factor in football. You know, sometimes you're not quite sure, what are you doing? Are you going to play seventh and an eighth grade game? Or are you combined? Are you going to play, you know, what's the makeup? What is normal? I guess that's my problem with some of that stuff, is what is normal? You know, what is the expectation? Because it seems to shift from year to year. But I honestly, in talking to people, just kind of as a sports fan, and as I talk to some coaches, some parents at the junior high level, you know, what they think as far as playing everybody twice home and home in basketball and volleyball, compared to having a little bit of flexibility to kind of match up your team for right. that year with better opponents. And, you know, I think from both sides, it's been relatively, you know, in favor of having that flexibility. But I do know in a lot of places where that makes the most sense is because it's just easier. It's just easier to schedule. And that's why.
Oh, there's no question. It's easier. Yeah, sure.
But I do think you're in a unique position when you are, you know, in the Chillicothe area, as all of our schools are, because you have, you know, 45 minutes can get you a lot of places.
Sure.
And I know from my perspective that I'm contacted constantly with schools within an hour that are always looking to fill their schedule. And, you know, I guess that depends how you look at that. It sounds good to say, well, it'd be great to have seven extra games to schedule, until you schedule six and you're trying to find right, that last right. one. So I guess, you know, you still run the risk. I mean, to a certain extent, grass is always greener. You know, right now it was, you know, kind of a problem in basketball when you were cheated out of a couple seventh grade games, and there's no way to make up just a seventh grade game as easily. Or if one year it's an eighth grade, you know, whatever. But then again, you know, I talked to Jackson and Logan, where they've got a conference of four, and they're trying to, you know, the amount of time they're spending on scheduling is just ridiculous. And that's why they have full-time ADs at those schools, I think, is because right. they've got to be on the phone all day to fill their schedules year in and year out. So, I mean, I guess you have to look at it from both sides in fairness. But I think the discrepancy, you hear a lot of people grumbling about that. There's a huge discrepancy between the big schools and the small schools generally at the junior high level, because it's just one single grade participating.
Well, let's fast forward it then and go to your freshman JV level. And I guess the one small school perspective I'll throw out there is, you know, let's use JV girls basketball for an example. We've talked a lot about it here on SVC Sports Talk. Occasionally it can happen freshman boys basketball. We've talked about the JV football at times, on how it's hit and miss around the SVC. And a lot of times, I guess, from the small school perspective, the league never really saw this as an issue that needed to be talked about when it was the small schools getting hit in the early going, say, with JV girls basketball. It was almost like the league was almost like looking down at, well, why can't this school get more kids out? What's going on over there? Well, then all of a sudden, when it started to slap the big schools in the face, now all of a sudden it was a problem everybody needed to talk about. I guess that would be me defending the small school. how important is it, Jeremy, and how much of a problem can it be if a league does not have eight schools that are going to match up in terms of consistency, in terms of keeping not just the junior high level, but now as we're finding our freshman and JV sports leagues going?
Well, I think it's difficult to – I think it's difficult for the schools that have the JV or have the freshman because, you know, they're trying to build their program and they're trying to solidify their rosters, you know, and in a lot of cases they've got kids trying out and they're cutting kids and keeping kids and making adjustments on, you know, who's going to fill the JV roster, who's going to fill the freshman roster. And then you have this unknown in terms of how many games you're going to get to play, what kind of consistency there's going to be, you know, or do you get these, you know, these magical two quarter games or whatever it is. I mean, I don't even know. I don't even like to talk about that, but I understand. I mean, the fact is the kids want to play.
Right.
And if you can field a team, you want to play other teams. You didn't make that team to practice. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I don't want to sound like Allen Iverson, but at the same time, you know, that's a long season to play a high school sport.
Sure it is. Right.
And not get any of the good out of being able to play games.
Well, I guess I look at it when I think of the major varsity sports, it's always a financial driven thing. You know, obviously in the fall, it doesn't matter. Obviously, if your football team's good, it's even going to be better. But even your bad football teams, your football is going to be your money maker. Volleyball, you're going to make a profit on. Basketball, I would think you'd make a profit on. Spring sports always get hammered in terms of people losing money. But then again, you know, do schools even try to really make money? But that's a thing I'll leave to another week on the show. But I guess my question would be, when you get to the varsity level, it's so money driven. You get to the question, Jeremy, of winning versus offering, if that makes sense. And I guess what's your take on the school's perspective when it comes down to how competitive the product's going to be that you put on the field or on the court compared to just offering, as you say, to get kids involved and give them the high school experience of playing a sport?
Well, again, I think that varies. That varies from place to place, and that's going to come and go over time. At a lot of places, you know, you are picking your spots. You're trying to be competitive. You're trying to build support. And other times, you're putting all your eggs in that basket, and you're going after, you know, a success when you have a run of athletes. Now, at bigger schools, the expectations are normally going to change. If you have higher involvement, you're going to expect a more consistency out of your programs. You're not going to rely on just a good run of athletes to carry you in the main sports. But, you know, there's no question about it that this really ends up being a football issue, because football is the revenue sport. Football is, you know, theoretically what pays the bills for, you know, the other seasons. And what makes the SVC unique is that the bigger schools are not in any way, shape, or form the powers in football.
Right.
And I think this is what people have to understand when you're looking at, you know, there's plenty of talk out there, and this school is interested and this school is interested. And, you know, then you have that debate. Well, we'll need to add two big schools and two small schools. And well, what you really have to think about is what type of big schools when you're talking about, say, Division III football schools. Mm-hmm. And you look around the area, and just to throw names out there, you think of schools like Circleville, Logan M, Wilder, Pickaway County, West Falls, and Pickaway. Are they going to want to come play football in the SVC? You go the other direction and maybe a Greenfield.
Well, yeah, Jeremy, then in the other directions, you'd have Waverly, and then you'd have Vinton County in a direction there. So, yeah, to go ahead and make your point there with some of the bigger schools that if they would want to join, what's some of your opinions you'd think they would have about our football conference?
Well, I think at the end of the day, that's what would drive the ultimate decision, is how you feel year in and year out on a long-term basis, because this can't be just a five-year plan. If you're going to make a commitment to expand, or as an outside school, if you're going to make a commitment to want to join, you have to look at it long term. And sure. I think that's really been the danger. When you look at the downfalls that other leagues have had when they've decided to expand, and then the can of worms that they've opened, the ones that have had trouble in the southern part of the state have been the ones that were looking for a quick fix. And it wasn't a long-term solution. It wasn't a long-term plan. And they were basically looking at it from just their own personal gain at the time. And the rest of the schools, you know, you use the SUAL as an example, they were trying to solidify their conference. They were trying to do what was best for their conference and bring in better teams. Well, that it wasn't reciprocated. That wasn't the goal of the teams coming in. They were only looking for their gain at the time. And, you know, they didn't have the tradition standpoint. So I think that's what you have to be careful of. And that's why you really have to do your homework if it's something you're going to entertain, because I do think it would be beneficial in a lot of ways. And I think there's plenty of positives that you can look at, whether you're, you know, a smaller school like Paint Valley, you know, whether you're the bigger schools, Zane Trace, Uniota, or Westfall. But at the end of the day, you really have to be a good listener, I think. I think you need to listen to a lot of perspectives and a lot of the bad, and not just be so fixated on making it happen that you don't do it with terms.
Well, Jaron, we're about ready to move on here, but I do think there's one more point to really talk about in this expansion. You know, when you look at some other sports later in the show, we'll be talking about some wrestling again. There's a soccer email that came in on that same wrestling topic from last week. You know, and you look at golf, cross country, in your spring sports, we mentioned earlier, a track would probably fall into this from an enrollment thing. You know, a lot of times at the small school, they'll be able to break into the division in the postseason, and you'll see we've had some state champions from our smaller schools. Mm-hmm. We've had some teams do really well. But, you know, in wrestling wise, it looks like it's going to fall in the same thing. You look this past winter with the kids from Paint Valley, the Perkins kid from Southeastern. In a league setting, though, it's going to come down to such an enrollment thing. With the other sports included now, do you think it's going to benefit the league as is to add these sports that we're going to talk about later? You know, you mentioned the thing about football. You know, are the outliers your Paint Valley footballs, your Edina volleyballs, some of these things over the years to where you would think that the bigger schools would dominate those, but because they haven't, do you think that's kind of hidden the enrollment problem moving forward? Does that make sense what I'm asking here in terms
Absolutely. I think, and again, starting with football, but I do think that's the case. I think because you've had, you know, state championships at Edina, and then that you've had state level success at some of the small schools, that people still want them to be a lot closer in size than they actually are. Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely. And I tell you, fans, obviously, no matter where you went to school or where your kids may go to school now, or athletes, if you're listening, let us know your take on this. Get involved in this discussion. admin1@svcsportzone.com. I know there's been some long time SVC people that have really cautioned people to slow down and not get in a big hurry. They say they've seen these different things go in spurts, 5-6 years this way, and then they come back, and they've really cautioned people to slow down a little bit in the decision making. There's other people that think we need to really be aggressive in our decision making and prepare our league for another great 50 years. So I'm interested to get a ton of feedback. I want to get people involved there on the inbox or on Facebook or Twitter, and I'm sure this conversation will definitely pick up. Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, let's turn our attention to the now in terms of SVC baseball and softball. We talked about it being wide open last week, and the first week was full of some crazy things, and we will tell you what you should make of all of it in 43 seconds.
Drown
Well, Jeremy, I tell you, as I hear that song, Air for Bruce, it kind of makes me think this past week that there might have been some people, rather than saying, put me in, coach, there might have been some pitchers around the baseball league saying, take me out, coach. it was one of those things where the rain hit and it really impacted week one here. I know St. Trace Paint Valley were able to go Monday night at the VA, and that put them in a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where the rest of the league was off that night. And they went into a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it was so interesting throughout the week to see how the advantages, disadvantages flip-flop all over the place, because Tuesday, Zane Trace and Paint Valley continue to pitch pretty well. ZT wins. Paint Valley goes 11th. That game's still undecided. But then on Wednesday, when you got to that third straight night, when the other teams are only at two, pitching really, really caught up with both of those teams late. I know Paint Valley let one kind of get away from them in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning. Zane Trace did the same thing. They were winning earlier, let one get away late where they started to run out of pitching. Then you get that Thursday night off for those two schools, and PV comes back and wins late Friday. ZT pitches really well but loses in a pitcher's duel Friday. But I know I scouted a game Thursday night where Southeastern and Nadina were in to their third game in three nights, and it was just a completely different type of high school game. It was more of a slugfest. Both coaches went to their aces in the middle innings, and I know Ethan Shepard came in and kind of steadied things up. That final score was really deceiving, that 19-9 game, because Southeastern actually led that game throughout the first four innings. And it was still just a 10-9 game in the fifth inning. So I guess my question for you, Jeremy, would be this, is as we see how much the rain and the reschedules just completely impact baseball and almost dictate the outcomes oftentimes.
Right.
How much in softball, if any, does this even matter? When you're talking about the one pitcher, obviously the catcher still puts a lot of wear and tear on the body. Kids are out there playing every night. The arms are sore, things like that. But how much in softball, if any, does this even really matter?
Well, I think it's a complete different animal, and in a couple different ways. First of all, in a lot of ways, I think it's actually beneficial. Especially early on in the year, I think for some of the reasons that you discussed, it's really a challenge for baseball coaches, because you're really managing your personnel, you're managing your whole week's worth of games, and as well as I do with baseball, it's you can't put that on the back of the shirt to take it one game at a time. You can do that once the game starts, but you can't do that as a coach as you're looking at what you're going to do, because if you throw everything in on one night, that could cost you two or three opportunities for victories down the road. But with softball, I think even though you saw a couple of teams use multiple pitchers this week for various reasons, it really is beneficial, because the pitcher gets in a groove first week of the season, first week of the league season. The hitters really have an opportunity to get in a groove playing every day defensively. You're getting a better opportunity to see what you can do as far as a coach with your personnel, and the kids are settling into what they do. I mean, it's completely different, and I would argue that it's almost a benefit at this point to play 4 days in a row, especially early on.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I wanted to ask you about, really jumped out at me, because as people know, I coach baseball, so I don't get to actually watch in person a lot of softball, but I follow it really, really closely in terms of the numbers and the results. And, I see Lytle, and then I see Newland and Riley and Dunn and Blevins and Rossard and Gino, and all the names are still there. And they're obviously, more nights than not, their pitching lines are really, really impressive. But I have noticed a little bit more offense than maybe I expected this year, Jeremy. What's your take on that? Is that more of the pitchers maybe not quite getting into the groove just yet, or are we seeing a softball league that was pretty young in terms of star status a year ago, and now offensively some teams growing up?
Well, I think it's a combination. In fairness, it is high school sports, and if you watch college softball, you're going to see some errors. But I think last week you saw a lot of runs for different reasons. It wasn't necessarily because of offensive production in terms of hits as much as it was just putting things together and putting pressure, extending innings, things like that. But, you know, I know there were a lot of unearned runs, which isn't nearly as typical, I think, in the softball league as it is in baseball sometimes. But at the same time, I think the one thing that you have to consider, you look at, like, say, Westfall's offense, and you know, they got five or six girls there that have seen these same pitchers since they were, you know, relatively young. And at the varsity level, you know, you start to get some tendencies. You start to have some tendencies. And although you would like to think that the pitchers would have the advantage, the more times they see the hitters in softball, I think it kind of works in reverse. I think the more you see a pitcher and you start to understand how they're going to attack you, you get a little more, you get a little more confidence, and that goes a long way. Because, you know, it's funny, I talked to three or four girls that, you know, on opposing teams this week throughout the league. And, you know, one of them would say, well, I can't hit Gino. So it was like the rest of the week was a relief. So, you know, they had the confidence and then somebody else would say, well, you know, I'm not really intimidated by Gino, but I just can't lay off, you know, the high pitches from Rochard or from Lytle. And, you know, I'm just vulnerable there. So I just assume not to see them, especially back to back, and get myself in a slump. So it is a little bit different, but when you think about the amount of times that they've seen those pitchers, I think, you know, the offense does start to gain an advantage a little bit.
Jeremy, let's turn our attention to Valero, the official sponsor of SVC standings there in the softballs. I see Westfall at the top at 4-0, and, you know, Paint Valley's been such a pleasant surprise. I think we knew they would be better, but I think they're even passing some expectations of many. Off to the 8-2 start, 3-1 there in the league with Zane Trace likewise. And obviously, Uniota, Huntington, Piketon, very, very capable. What's been your take of this Westfall group, in terms of just their clutch hitting and some of their offensive power in terms of having them off to the 4-0 start?
With Westfall, like we talked about last week, just the depth of their lineup, I think they're able to do things similarly to what Uniota did last year and just turn their lineup over. And then all of a sudden, when you're facing the top of that order for the fourth time, makes them a lot, makes for some more difficult outs. And I think you saw that as they scored in the seventh inning. The number of runs and the home runs they hit in the seventh inning this week really made the difference in the league standings.
No question about it.
So, you know, on a similar take, and I was able to talk to some baseball coaches this week, and, you know, you and I talked about the challenges with the schedule, but, you know, what are your thoughts about the pitching in the baseball league so far?
Well, I think the top end, Jeremy, if I'm being honest, I think the top end of most stats were really, really impressive. I know Shepard threw the ball real well. Sarver was lights out the other night. I know even Kello for Huntington there has been solid. McCloy and McFadden, when properly rested, have been really dominant. The Jordan kid at Piketon, good. Die. I know Uniota Westfall got into a complete football score the other night, but I think earlier in the week when they had some of their top guys on the mound, it was solid. And Swackhammer. So, yeah, I'd have to say the top half of the pitching staffs have been really good. Obviously, the depth at this point is probably the question mark, but it's just interesting. You see some of those Monday, Friday scores throughout the year. You'll see some 2-1, 3-2 type of games, and then sometimes if you get the rain and you get that third straight game, or definitely when you get a fourth straight game, that's when you'll sometimes see that 20-13 game just randomly show up one night. So that's where baseball is probably a little bit different on the pitching aspect.
Well, and, you know, and it's, that's interesting when you mention that. You know, Westfall had some phenomenal comeback victories early on, and, you know, fighting through some inexperience and some tough defense at times. But, you know, they were able to build some momentum and build off of that. And I think when you speak of momentum, I think, you know, you look at Piketon, you know, look at their start, and, you know, talk a little bit about the Red Streaks.
Well, I'll say this about Piketon, and a lot of people think I look too far into this, and basically what I would say to them is I think you're crazy, is when you're dealing with a group like Piketon, they have a handful of kids back that have watched a lot of winning baseball, and they've had three, four kids that played some key roles in some of that winning, in terms of winning a championship, being a member of teams that went to a couple regionals earlier in their career, and I think what you found to this point is you found some kids that have just figured out a way to win. You look at them at 4-1 overall, 3-1 in the league. They hold on to win a non-league game 7-6. You know, anytime, I always say, anytime you win by a run, you could have just as easily lost by a run.
Absolutely.
You know, so they hang on to win 7-6. They hang on the other night 2-1. I know they were up 2-0 against Paint Valley in the fifth inning of a game where they just kind of broke things open. You know, so they're a team. I think they're a team that really knows how to win. The leadership on that team had good leadership before them, which I think is important. So I guess I'm not one that's surprised by Piketon's start nearly as much as some other people have been. You mentioned Westfall. Obviously, Westfall, good or bad in terms of baseball, they're always going to be one of the more athletic teams in our conference, and you just see that in terms of their offense and the ability to put the ball in play and to do some things running the bases to put pressure on. So really the wide open league that we thought it would be, particularly right there in the middle of the pack. But yeah, the Piketon, that's a great question, Jeremy, because really the Piketon start to me is not as big a surprise as I think it would be to some. I tell you what, real quick, let me throw back to you, the Lady Bearcats. You're talking about surprise starts. I think everybody knew they were going to be better. What's your take at Paint Valley at 8-2 at this point, and even at 3-1 in the league, you know, beating Huntington and then really going toe-to-toe with the Zane Trace and losing a tough one there? Your take on the Lady Bearcats and the job Coach Medved's done?
Well, anytime you have that many girls that have played, and gotten the experience that they've gotten, I think you're going to get better defensively, which eliminates the big inning for the other team. And then obviously you've got a healthy Aaron Riley, and then the emergence of Newland. I just think that gives them a little bit of depth, and it takes pressure off of Aaron to feel like she has to pitch all the time. And it also, you know, that also takes pressure off Newland that, you know, hey, it's not like they're just throwing me out here to the wolves as a freshman.
Sure.
You know, if I succeed, fine. If not, it's not like there's a plan B. And I think that's critical when you're dealing with, you know, confidence of an individual, especially when you're talking about as a pitcher. So it's going to be interesting to see how they react this week, but they've certainly two things I think they're important. Number one, they got some games in the first week where the other teams haven't. So, you know, they got to 10 games where many teams have only played, you know, a little more than half that. So I think that's important for a young team. And now they can kind of settle in and, you know, they've played some close games and they've scored some runs and, you know, they've pitched some shutouts. So they find different ways to win. And that's a big key if you're going to keep yourself in the race throughout the season.
Well, Jeremy makes a good point there in terms of scheduling. We're recording here on Sunday night, so the week he's referring to is going to be a week of just two SVC games, but it's going to be Uniota Westfall there for the Lady Cats. So obviously going to be a lot to talk about on next week's show there. Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, let's go to extra innings here. Jeremy, you hit the lead off with a softball response. I will follow with a baseball opinion. So fans, feel free to play along as we take a look at three questions in this week's extra innings.
Who or what caught your attention during the opening week of SEC play?
Well, I was a little intrigued with how many teams use multiple pitchers that I was a little surprised with. But the biggest surprise so far has been Michaela Newland.
Jeremy, I'll say on the baseball side, I'll go with Adina's depth and versatility.
After watching some key matchups this past week, the biggest factor in determining this year's SVC champion will be what?
Adjustments and preparation.
I'm going to say the depth of role players.
What is your opinion of the SVC's policy of making up games on the next available night, even if it means canceling non-league games?
I'll say that I agree mostly.
I've always been kind of in the middle on this, but I'll say that I understand it. Well, Jeremy, as we revisit some of these extra inning topics here, I guess the one I want to touch on the most is number two here. As we move forward now, we're talking about the biggest factor in the race. For me, it's the depth of role players in terms of who can – you know, maybe a lot of times 6-9 in their order get a little bit of offensive production. I know that was really, really important in some late inning wins for teams this past week. what's your take in terms of the softball there on your answer that you really think is going to play a factor in determining who's going to be the champion here?
Well,
about
I would say, you know, going off your point, I think that's another thought that I have, and it's certainly true when you're talking about sometimes it's just some of the tough spots in your order, whether it's because of a lefty-lefty matchup or somebody that just, you know, struggles with a particular pitcher. Sometimes it's just a matter of figuring out how to go ahead and just advance the runner and be able to make yourself productive and not, you know, make an easy out, for lack of a better term. But for me, you know, with adjustments and preparations, I think there's so much talk about the pitching, and there aren't a lot of secrets about the, I mean, everybody knows what everybody has for the most part. And the second time through the league, it's going to be interesting to see if teams take a different approach, if teams make adjustments on how they play in a particular matchup and kind of try to battle their weaknesses against a particular team or pitcher by completely approaching the game differently, whether it's bunting more, whether it's taking more pitches, whether it's just simply, you know, juggling their order, you know, because you might have a kid that just has more success against a given pitcher than another. Because you go back to superstitions a little bit. We never talked about it from coach's standpoint, but some coaches just don't like to mess with their lineups.
Sure.
And others just hate to leave them the same. So it kind of sometimes you've got to look beyond your comfort zone and you know, find that happy medium of what's best for your team and what, you know, helps put the pressure on the other side and take the pressure off of you.
Well, Jeremy, I know I mentioned in that first answer talking about Adina's depth and versatility. What I meant by that is, you know, they can lock up with you and beat you 2-1, but they also have proven this week that, you know, if the pitching just seems to fail one night or they're out of pitching, they can also just get and out slug you 20-10 or whatever.
Right.
Is that a little bit of, you know, I know Uniota softball last year, maybe Westfall showing some characteristics this year. Is that kind of a fair thing to look at in softball as well?
That's exactly, you know, after we talked the other night and I asked your opinion after watching Adina, those were kind of my same thoughts. It's like, well, when you get to the sixth and seventh inning, now all of a sudden, because they've grinded you out, got deeper into your bullpen, and making that fourth at bat or getting all the way through their order the fourth time, it just makes it really swings the advantage to the offense in that time, I think. And you know, you certainly see the similarities in softball as well with Westfall.
Well, really good stuff. I'll tell you what, fans, we're going to leave that last question alone for now. I just wanted to throw it out there. I would love to know what you, the parents, and you, some of the fans, think of it in terms of how confusing it can make the scheduling sometimes. We're going to talk about that in depth here in some upcoming shows. So, again, how do you feel about the SVC policy of, say, when a Monday night game is rained out, it just automatically goes to Tuesday or whatever the next open night is? I really want to get some parent feedback on that to let us know. Again, Facebook or Twitter, the inbox at admin1@svcsportzone.com. You can also call 740-569-3254 and just use our voice system there, the message system, to leave your opinion. Well, Jeremy, before we get out of here this week, definitely wanted to touch on the wrestling feedback. I'm still planning to have like a Tegan McFadden or some other coaches or people. Wasn't quite able to set that up this week. Definitely going to have that in some upcoming shows. But we had so much other feedback. I hate to not get the fans included here. There were two emails that jumped out at me. One in the inbox says, "I know you guys are trying to be politically correct, but if you honestly do not think wrestling will not have a negative impact on basketball, you are both crazy. I love the show and respect your opinions, but let's not be afraid to be honest." Well, then another one comes in today, Jeremy, talking about that this person's a longtime supporter of soccer in the SVC, and soccer has stretched from boys into girls now, and it's been around. And why is wrestling getting the opportunity to do this when soccer has been held up? They're asking if we know what's holding up soccer and things like that. So I guess I'd lump those together, and I'll throw this out there, and then you jump in, Jeremy, and tell me I'm crazy. I guess if you're looking at it from an individual perspective, I understand what this basketball fan's saying. I'll just go and use Tegan McFadden as an example. Tegan's an Ohio football player. He's obviously wrestling at the state level. In baseball, he's as good a defensive catcher as you'll find in Southeast Ohio, and the offense is improving all the time. He's going to be a three-sport just star in this league. And by the time he's done, the resume he's going to put together. Now, if he would have grown up in sixth, seventh grade playing basketball, would he eventually been a good basketball player? Well, sure he would have. But I guess my point is, I have no problem offering kids the opportunity to go down different avenues. In high school sports, no matter what you get involved in, there's a lot of different things you can learn in terms of being a teammate and being a part of a sport. As far as the development of your basketball program, you know, I just think it comes down to getting kids involved at a young age and getting them taught properly and coming up through junior high. I think there's room for both. It's no different than having a volleyball program and a soccer program, or having in the spring, having your baseball team and your track team. I've never looked at it as a baseball coach, as I said last week, Jeremy, as me versus the track team. Yeah, I've never looked at it like that. I offer baseball and I teach baseball, and if people want to be involved in that, great. If there's an athlete that wants to go run track, that's great too. I guess I just look at it like that. And as far as wrestling over soccer, it's one of those things where, again, I question how much has soccer pushed the issue. I think for the longest time, when soccer gained some momentum, I know at some schools it then split into boys and girls. And a lot of it, again, we go back to enrollment. A lot of schools haven't been able to match that. So soccer's kind of gone this independent route, so to speak. And it'll be interesting to see if, when wrestling does join in the SVC, to see if some of these enrollment things happen in terms of these weight classes, to see if teams kind of like in track are able to win SVC titles based on enrollment more than having maybe the best wrestlers, if that makes sense. Jeremy, just some of your take on some of the feedback the fans have sent in this week.
Well, I find it a little bit interesting because I can see I can almost see the soccer football as far as like fighting with athletes, because you're talking about, you know, you do have to have a minimum number of kids to be able to field a soccer team.
Yes.
Whereas with wrestling, you could have a larger variable. I mean, you could wrestle with six or seven kids and just not be able to fill the weight
classes.
That's
an excellent point that I didn't think.
So I just don't, as far as the competition goes, I'm just saying, being a coach, being a basketball coach, being involved with athletics, being a baseball coach, I've seen it come up with baseball or softball and track a lot more often than I've ever seen conflicts come up with losing an athlete to one sport over another when it came to basketball or wrestling. Now, you know, sure, if you've got, I'll just use, Minford for an example, and you had, a next level Division I football player like that ends up being your center, and he's a pretty darn good basketball player. Would you like having him wrestle heavyweight? Well, yeah, I'm sure you would. But, I just don't see it happening as often. I think there's more advantages on the other side of it, as far as kids that don't have the skill set to play basketball that can wrestle, or kids that don't have, the ability physically to wrestle that can play basketball. I don't see that as big as an issue. Whereas I could almost understand the argument a little bit more with soccer, just because it takes so many kids and it takes so much involvement, as does football, to have a successful program. I do think numbers are a bigger deal in those sports. So I could see the argument in the fall. I just don't really see it in the winter or spring nearly as much.
I guess the point worth mentioning again for me is, as I talked about this last week, is I think it's huge for administrators and for community to share their expectations with their coaches, have the coaches give theirs back to make sure everybody gets on the same page. Because I think what happens a lot of times is, we talked earlier in the show, Jeremy, about winning versus offering. And sometimes I think if a school deems it necessary to offer this and offer this and offer this and offer this, I think there has to be an understanding throughout that, is as long as they're getting more and more kids in participation, that mm-hmm. you know, sometimes this team's going to be good. Sometimes this team's going to be good. Is the expectation to always have a JV team in this particular sport? Is it an expectation to always have a seventh and eighth grade team in this sport? So I think the expectation of the administration and the community being involved in the athletic programs is important, especially in this enrollment discrepancy we've been talking about. Do you agree?
I do agree. And honestly, you want to talk about a bigger impact. I think perhaps junior high wrestling has a greater impact on, say, a seventh grade and an eighth grade basketball team, because you're going to play wrestling. Yes. You know, you're going to wrestle seventh and eighth grade combined. But in basketball, you know, that could be the difference. If there are 11 kids that wrestle, you know, one of the smaller schools, that could affect whether they have two basketball teams. So, you know, in that regard, I could see that.
Just the difference between having what a junior high
single
team
grade
and a seventh
Absolutely.
And eighth grade. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, fans, we're running out of time this week, but I just want to let you know, we definitely have not forgotten about some of these other emails that have come in. Track results from, I know the SC Southeastern invite was just this past week, the Paint Valley invite coming up. The website is asking you to please send in results. Obviously, as a sports fan, I try my best to go out and seek the results and try to see who's winning this, winning that. But for whatever reason this year, we are not getting those in. So again, Jeremy and I are more than willing to include some track into the show, talk some track, but we've got to get those results into the website. I know we had a Brian Alley email that was outstanding this past week. Again, definitely could talk some off-season basketball. Maybe we'll do that on an upcoming show. So anything in the SVC, be it in season or out of season, that you want to hear Jeremy and I talk about, feel free to send it into the inbox. Again, that's admin1@svcsportzone.com. Or again, call 740-569-3254. It'll just be a normal voicemail. Leave your message. I think it gives you up to about a minute to leave your comment or your question, and we'll use that here on SVC Sports Talk. So I think it's been a great second week of the spring, Jeremy, and we'll look forward to some feedback from the fans. So until next time, for the great people at the Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other great sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.